Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal, and welcome to episode 48. Today, we're going to be talking about what you wish you knew about astrology. I would say about a month ago, I asked y'all on Instagram what you wish you knew about astrology, and I got a plethora of answers from all different areas of astrological questioning, so I think it should be a really interesting episode, and I'm excited to answer your questions in this episode. So can I just say this? As a content creator, you know, we're in a time of a very trying time in the world right now, obviously. So it's March 26th, 2020, as I'm recording this, and you know, there's a lot going on. You know, a lot of us are being mandated by our states to shelter in place. A lot of us are going through a lot of, you know, financial difficulties and difficulties with our mental health as we are, you know, being called to isolate because of the coronavirus. And you know, as a content creator, I go back and forth with, like, should my content right now be relevant to the world situation, or should it be more of an escape from what is going on, if you get me? So I am personally, I don't think there's a right or wrong right now, because I do think we need both types of content, but I'm trying to kind of meet myself in a middle ground. So this particular episode is sort of going to be more of like a let's escape the situation and just have fun and talk about astrology today. But maybe there will be, you know, another episode where it's not that and we are talking about the current situation. And I think as a healer, or as a even a spiritual content creator, quote unquote, you know, we can't just like bypass the situation and, you know, not say anything. But I guess that's my concern with coming out with a few like fun episodes, fun, quote unquote. I don't want anybody to perceive me bypassing the situation or the gravity of what is going on right now. But I was also thinking, like, we need a break, right? Sometimes we just need a break. Sometimes we just need to return to the joy and the passion that I think we all feel when it comes to learning astrology. And I like to think that that joy and passion is the bones of my podcast. So let's just focus on that today. If you are looking for a little bit more of a hashtag relevant offering, I did put up a video on my Patreon called Aries Season Magic, and you can watch that even if you are not an official patron. Yeah, if you are not an official patron, you can still watch that. Just go to the link in the show notes. It's available for everybody. And I talk a little bit more about how we can productively use this time. And even though we are going through a crisis right now in the world, you know, we do still have a lot of energy, manifestation energy on our hands. So I did talk a little bit about that in that video. So check it out. And speaking of Patreon, if I can just plug myself for 2 minutes here, guys, I promise it's only going to last 2 minutes. Patreon, I recently updated it. So as you know, when I originally released my Patreon, my content was a little bit more geared to tarot, but I was not finding that I was enjoying the tarot videos that I was making as much as I wanted to be. So now we're kind of switching gears, and the tiers, the $5 tier and the $7 tier on my Patreon are all going to now be focused more in the astrological realm. So if you like my astrology content and you would like to have access to my secret YouTube channel, where it's going to be, you know, more veered towards astrology content now. You can check that out on Patreon. And my other two tiers, the Tarot Letter Club, that's staying the same. That's something that I'm finding a lot of enjoyment in. So that one's staying the same. The other one's evolving. Just a quick update. And if you were wanting to become a Patreon, but you were waiting for more astrology content, this is the time. And dun dun dun, one more announcement on my end. I've waited like so long for this, but my new website is officially published at the time that you are listening to this right now. So if you have been wanting to book astrology, natal chart reading with me, if you've been wanting a tarot reading, I also have a new offering up there too, which is distance Reiki. I do understand that, again, it's a financially trying time at the moment, so I don't mean to be like plugging a non-essential business, but as my I was at the store like right before Illinois called the shelter in place, right? And I was at the store and I was buying like the last bulk of stuff that I needed to get, and the cashier laughed at me and she held up my box of tampons and she's like, you know what, this just makes me laugh because regardless of what's going on, life goes on. And I started laughing too and I was like, it's totally true. So again, regardless of the situation at hand, life goes on. You know, you may need someone to hold space for you in the context of astrology or tarot or Reiki, and I am very much available and ready to hold that space for you. So if you want to look more at my offerings, link in show notes. And guys, I work so hard on the website, so if you just even want to click on it and just look at it because it's really pretty, that would mean a lot to me too. So that's all I'm going to say about my stuff. But yes, April books are open. Okay, let's get into the main chunk of this episode. So again, I asked everybody on Instagram what you wish you understood about astrology. You know, those parts of astrology that us astrologers talk about, and maybe it just feels like it goes right over your head and you have trouble grasping what it really means. You sent me all your questions when it comes to that, and let's just get into it. Let's just answer it. So I'll keep you guys all anonymous, but the first question was, what does it mean when an astrologer says that a current transit is quote unquote hitting your natal chart? So I'm probably guilty of saying this. So what do we mean when we say a transit is hitting your natal chart? Well, first, let's just quickly go over the difference between like a natal chart and the transiting sky. Okay. So a natal chart or your natal planet, you know, your natal chart is sort of frozen in place, if that makes sense. What the natal chart really is, it's a snapshot of the sky at the exact moment of your birth, and it stays frozen in place, like I said. Now, technically, if we look into like a progress chart, the planets do move and progress, but we're not talking about that right now. We're just talking about like a good old plain natal chart. It is frozen in place, right? But obviously the sky does not stay like that. The sky is always moving. So the moving sky above us is called the transiting sky or the transiting planets. And the transiting sky and the transiting planets, they are constantly making aspects or transits to our natal chart, which is frozen in place. So I almost like to think of like the natal chart, if you think of like the natal chart as like your like piece of paper that's like, you know, if you printed it out, it's a piece of paper that's forever going to look like that. And then above it is sort of like the chandelier of the spinning planets. and they're always moving and changing. And when the planets above, when the transiting planets above are moving and changing, they, again, like I said, are making mathematical relationships or aspects to your natal chart. So when astrologers say a transit is hitting your chart, it's just a fancy way of saying that a transiting planet is forming an aspect to your natal planet. Okay, so if me, the astrologer, if I say Pluto is hitting your sun, I probably mean that transiting Pluto is hitting or conjunct your natal sun, right? So it's our planet, it's actually our planetary transits that are what really shape us as people. Like I said, you know, the natal chart stays frozen in place, but as certain transiting planets, quote unquote, hit or set off our charts in certain ways, that's when certain events come into our life that start to change us as people. And if we didn't have the transiting planets, you know, changing and hitting and moving and making aspects to our natal chart, we would actually never grow as people, right? So, you know, technically we don't experience our full chart all at once, right? You know, as life moves forward, we may experience a period of time when we're really, you know, leaning on our, let's say, Mars trine Jupiter. But then there's another period of time where we're really experiencing our own Saturn square Pluto. So we don't like have this intensity of all of our natal planets and natal aspects all at once. Like I said, there's periods of time where certain things are being highlighted. And again, that's because a transiting planet is probably setting it off, right? So for instance, right now, a lot of us, everybody, you know, is probably having something set off in their natal chart by all of the planets in Capricorn right now, all of the transiting planets in Capricorn. So we've got transiting Jupiter, transiting Jupiter, Saturn, Pluto. I believe Mars right now is also in Capricorn. We have some really big players in the transiting sky all in Capricorn right now. And that's all setting off our charts, but in different and individual ways. For some person, it could be right now their business is completely thriving and they're growing as a person and they feel really good because this transit is, let's say, forming all these Capricorn planets are forming a trine to their sun. So they're feeling extremely expansive. But then let's say you're like me and all of the transiting planets in Capricorn are sitting or actually opposing your rising or your ascendant. So that's actually what the transiting Capricorn planets are doing to me right now. So you can imagine all of these transiting Capricorn planets right now, they're setting off, quote unquote, my ascendant because they're opposing my ascendant. And what is happening? Well, I'm changing how I'm showing up in the world. So I hope that answers the question, but you know, long story short, when we say a current transit is hitting your natal chart, it means that a transiting planet is setting something off or making an aspect to something in your natal chart, okay? So someone also asked me, what do you think about Saturn returns? So this is a very specific question. You did not ask, what is a Saturn return? You asked me what I thought of Saturn returns, so I appreciated this interesting question. Now, I will briefly go over what a Saturn return is, just because I think this is a popular buzzword or phrase that kind of gets sprinkled around the astrological internets a lot. And I think because a lot of people who may, you know, maybe they're not as well informed about astrology as they possibly could be. Maybe they're talking about Saturn returns in a really negative context, and then they're kind of using it for sort of like fear-mongering purposes. And I do see that sometimes, and I don't necessarily agree that a Saturn return has to be this like big dreadful thing. But essentially, you know, mathematically speaking, a Saturn return is when transiting Saturn then comes up and is like beep, 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 and it goes right on, it exactly conjuncts your natal Saturn. So transiting Saturn is making a conjunction with your natal Saturn, okay? That is technically what a Saturn return is. Now, it takes roughly 28, 29, 30-ish years for transiting Saturn to make its way all the way around your chart, right? And arrive back at your natal Saturn placement. So that's why a Saturn return happens around the age of 28 or 29 years old, although it depends on your chart. Now, in a more like esoteric definition, the Saturn return is sort of the marker of astrological adulthood, right? So this is kind of when you, you're kind of fully, you're now being considered to being fully living out your chart by now. If this makes sense. And this kind of goes back to also like more of the esoteric astrological principle that we maybe aren't completely our sun sign. Maybe when we're kids, we're living a little bit more in our moon sign. And it's not until we get older when we really come into our sun sign, or we come into like who we're astrologically quote unquote meant to be. And the Saturn return actually kind of marks this astrological adulthood, right? I will say that, you know, before you like try to go and like see if you're going through your Saturn return, I want to say you want to make sure you're checking the degree of your Saturn before you're claiming to be in your Saturn return, right? Like for instance, right now, in the, literally the past week, Saturn, transiting Saturn, has moved into Aquarius. So technically, you know, I'll use Saturn in Aquarius babies, you are now embarking on your the journey of your Saturn return, right? But your official, hashtag official Saturn return won't actually be until transiting Saturn, you know, comes much, much closer to your natal Saturn. You know, that is the actual Saturn return. So for instance, right now, like I said, transiting Saturn just moved into Aquarius. So transiting Saturn is currently at 0 degrees Aquarius. Let's say your natal Saturn is at 24 degrees Aquarius. Well, Saturn isn't even going to get to 24 degrees Aquarius until like the beginning of 2023. And I know this because I checked my ephemeris. so like technically, again, like if you're Saturn in Aquarius, you are, I would say, embarking on your Saturn return right now. But yet again, if your Saturn in Aquarius isn't into like the later degrees of Aquarius, you know, you won't actually be experiencing the meat of your Saturn return for another couple years. So to answer the original question, what do I think about Saturn returns? I think they can be a great thing. I also think that they can be something that really kicks you in the ass. you know, it's kind of like a toss-up. And I think it depends on how much like personal development you have done in your 20s, I think that has a lot to do with how your Saturn return plays out once you arrive at, you know, 28, 29, 30 years old. You know, if you feel like there's been a lot of things in your 20s that, you know, you've avoided, or there's healing that needed to be done that you haven't wanted to do, or there's like old toxic patterns that you continuously do even though you know you've grown out of them, your Saturn return will indubitably highlight those things. But, you know, I've also heard, you know, if people are doing, you know, their personal development in their 20s, and, you know, they are kind of doing the things that they need to be doing on their path, quote unquote, I think Saturn return can be a great thing and can be sort of this marker of even achievement. I've heard people, you know, publishing their book during their Saturn return, you know, becoming a teacher, getting a degree, getting married. There's also a lot of like life events that happen in the Saturn return too. So it's not just like this doom and gloom, like 2 to 3 year period where you hate your life. Like there's some really good things that could happen during it too. And also it's important to note that like the flavor of your Saturn return, I think has much more to do with the house that Saturn sits in your birth chart. So yes, is the sign of Saturn important? Sure. But like, you know, something on Astro Twitter I saw the other day that I was like, oh my God, like, you know, someone had asked, like, tweeted like an Astro Twitter, an astrologer, a Twitter astrologer, they had tweeted something like for everybody who, I kind of forget what they said, but they were like, for everybody who had Saturn in Sagittarius, you know, comment below what you experienced. I want to see if there's a common thread. And I think to myself, I'm like, okay, but does this person get that, you know, your Saturn return has a lot more to do with like the house Saturn is sitting in, how Saturn is being aspected in your birth chart? It's not just about the sign, and it's not like all Saturn in Aquarius people are going to have the same Saturn return. Don't get me wrong, there could be kind of an underlying theme, but the odds of like millions of people in the world who have Saturn and Aquarius, the odds of them all like going through the exact same thing during their Saturn return is not likely, because every single person has their own chart. So again, go back to what house Saturn is sitting in your chart. That will actually be the flavor of your Saturn return. So let's say your Saturn, let's say you're like me. By the way, I have not gone through my Saturn return yet. I will be going through my Saturn return when Saturn gets around to Pisces, so that's not going to be for a while. But I have my Saturn in my ninth house. Okay, so the ninth house has a lot to do with long distance travel. It has to do with education, higher education. It's also the house of publishing. Guys, would it be far off to say during my Saturn return, I might be publishing my first book? You know, like I kind of think that could be the theme of my Saturn return, because my Saturn is in my ninth house. You know, there's also going to be some trials and tribulations during my own Saturn return too. How do I know this? Well, Saturn is making some interesting aspects in my own personal birth chart. So Saturn is conjunct my sun. So during my Saturn return, there's also probably going to be some maybe some mental health challenges. You know, there's going to be some trials and tribulations. So this is why I would suggest, before you like doom and gloom your Saturn return, I would suggest consulting an astrologer if you really want to know more about what your Saturn return may hold for you. And I actually think that it might be a great time to get an astrology reading during your Saturn return, or like kind of if you know it's coming in the next year. I've found that people unknowingly make appointments with me. They don't even know their Saturn return's coming up, and it's coming up, and I'm like, oh, perfect timing. It's the perfect time to get an astrology reading. And not to go on and on about this too much, but I think what people also fail to understand is that there are more like quote unquote like big aspects that you will go through in your life besides the Saturn return. The Saturn return also happens every 29-ish years, so you don't just do it once. You do it twice and maybe three times depending on how old you live to. But there's also other things that will happen. I think that like everybody who is around like between 38 and 40, like late 30s, early 40s, people go through something called a Pluto square Pluto, which I happen to think is like a much deeper, bigger deal than a Saturn return. And also late 30s, early 40s, people also go through something called a Uranus opposition Uranus, where transiting Uranus is then opposing their natal Uranus. So again, these kind of things are other like big quote unquote big life transits that we all go through, but maybe are not as hyped up as the Saturn return, although they may be equally as important. So long story short, around 28 years old, get yourself an astrology reading. And then around late 30s, again, get yourself an astrology reading. You're probably going through some big transits. So next question. So it's not really a question, but someone said, still learning about which planets like each other or not, LOL. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. So some baby astrologers, they may not be or I should say baby student astrology studiers. maybe you guys don't necessarily know that not all of the planets get along, okay? And this is more of like an ancient astrology teaching. And by the way, I tend to veer much more towards like the modern esoteric psychological astrology realm. I am not in any way, shape, or form like trained in ancient astrology. My studies of ancient astrology have been me like taking rigorous notes on every free ancient astrology offering that Chris Brennan has on the astrology podcast or on his YouTube. Like that's like pretty much the end of my ancient astrology studies. Although eventually when I can afford it, I would absolutely love to take the Hellenistic astrology course by Chris Brennan. So that's like a long-term plan for me. But even after I take that though, like I know in my heart I'm a little bit more of like a modern esoteric astrologer. Like I know in my heart, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think I'm really ever going to be like a hashtag ancient astrologer just because it's not where my passion lies. I love so much more to look at astrology from a psychological perspective. But going back into like from an ancient astrology perspective, there are benefic planets. So those are the good planets like Jupiter and Venus. And then there are malefic planets. So the quote unquote bad planets. And those are Mars and Saturn. So when this person said, I don't know which planets like each other or not, typically like the malefics don't like each other. The Mars and Saturn don't get along. But Jupiter and Venus, the benefics, they really like each other. So that's kind of how I think of it. For me, I actually, and I don't know if this is like a universal astrological truth. I don't think it is, but it's something that me and my astrology teacher would talk about when we were discussing like how the planets differ. And for me, from my perspective, there are literally no two greater planets that differ from each other than Mars and Neptune. Like, I just see the meaning of Mars and the meaning of Neptune to be so, just so opposite. So I often think of like Mars and Neptune kind of being two planets that don't necessarily get along. I also see Jupiter and Saturn that way too. I feel like Jupiter and Saturn have way different goals. Jupiter's goal is to expand and then Saturn's goal is to contract, right? So I also think that it's interesting to, we'll talk about the relationship between the sun and the moon in a little while, but I also think that the sun and moon can, depending on how they're aspected in the chart, the sun and moon can also get along or not get along in the chart, and that's also something that's really important to look at. Like, sometimes I think because I have my sun and moon in the same sign, sometimes I think that, like, my sun and moon are almost, like, unhealthy twins who don't have separate friends or separate lives, and they're just, like, unhealthily close, like, so they, like, almost get along, like, too well, where I could use a little bit of, like, discord between them. But if you have your sun and moon in the same sign, you might understand. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's up to the astrologer to kind of see which planets for them, like, get along, or which planets fight, but it also comes down to how the planets are being aspected, right? So the next question, someone asked, an easy way to remember which transit is which. So this is interesting. So we're talking about, like, transiting astrology, like daily astrological forecasts. So if you read like a weekly or daily horoscope, or you listen to someone like Ann Ortley's podcast, you know, she's giving like a weekly transit report essentially. So it can be a little bit confusing, especially if you're just beginning your astrological journey. You know, you're hearing these astrologers say things like Jupiter trine Venus and Mars square Pluto and Mars is approaching a conjunction with Saturn and all this stuff, and you're like, what does it mean? So I would say if you're trying to make sense of an astrological forecast that you're hearing from an astrologer, I would say start with piecing together the planets. And this goes back to like my golden rule, like you can't bullshit your astrological, your basics, your astrological, you can bullshit it, but you're not supposed to. And if you do bullshit learning the astrological basics you will literally never be able to get it, you know? Like, I, from my perspective, you just don't have a choice. If you want to learn astrology, you're going to have to memorize stuff, you know? You're gonna have to memorize the meanings of the planets, you're gonna have to memorize the meanings of the signs, you're gonna have to memorize the meanings of the aspects. There's memorization involved. No matter how much you like this podcast and you like my sweet, sweet voice, you know, speaking to you about the planets, even this is probably not enough to completely teach you the fundamentals of astrology. So when it comes to like an easy way to remember this or that, well, sometimes I don't think there's necessarily an easy way. It just comes down to memorization and how bad you really want to study it, you know? But I do find the study to be very fulfilling. So even if you're not going to ever be a professional astrologer, I think we can all get something out of the study of astrology. But here's the spark notes. If a astrologer is talking about planets trining each other, trining is usually a good conversation between both of the planets. A square is more of like an argument or a challenging conversation between the planets involved. a conjunction. This is when both planets come together really tight, really close, and the meaning of the planets sort of get alchemized together and they become this new substance. And then planets opposing each other, that's when, again, it's a little bit more of a challenge or an argument going on, but also opposing planets, depending on which planets are opposing each other, it can be a productive thing. So, and all transits can be productive depending on how we use them, right? So I would say the golden rule is start with the planet. If I said something like, this week, because this is true, this week, Mars is approaching a conjunction with Saturn, to piece that, you know, apart, what does Mars mean? Mars is the planet of action. Mars is the planet of willpower. Saturn, who is Saturn? Saturn is the planet of constriction. He's the timekeeper, the time lord. He's like Father Time. He kind of teaches us the tough lessons. And they're approaching a conjunction. And like I said, conjunction is when the meaning of the planets sort of alchemize together into this new substance. So that's kind of how you start to piece it together. Start with the planets. What did the planets say? How did the planets get along? We know from ancient astrology, the two malefics, Mars and Saturn, they don't get along so well. So maybe we already know this is going to be a little bit of a nastier one. But you know, it depends. You know, we could use this to get a lot of stuff done. We could use this to move forward in a challenging time, which we might have to do right now. So I hope that makes sense in some way. Someone asked, what do the houses mean? Okay, so I'm not gonna go over each individual house right now, but I will say, if you've had a natal chart reading with me, you know that I say this before each reading to kind of explain the pieces, the moving parts of a birth chart. And what I'm about to say is not something that I made up myself. Like, I feel like all astrologers use this metaphor. But the planets are sort of like the characters or the actors in your life story, right? The sign that the planet is in is sort of the costume your actor or actress is wearing. The aspects are how the characters in your story are interacting with each other. And the house is the stage where they are acting out their scene. Okay, so that's kind of the gist of what the house is. It's sort of like different themes of life. And if you have planets in certain houses, they're heavily influencing that certain theme of your life. Just another note, there are many different types of house systems. I typically lean towards more of like a modern esoteric view of astrology. So I tend to favor the Placidus house system. I find it to be better for looking at psychology, using astrology as more of like a counseling tool. Whereas if you're using ancient astrology, you're probably using a whole sign or the whole house system. So I'm not going to go into explaining the difference. It's not worth going into the technicalities of it all in this kind of episode. But I will say the astrology podcast by Chris Brennan has some really good information when it comes to different house systems. And at the end of the day, if you are just a seeker of a natal chart reading, that probably doesn't matter to you that much, you know? Like, you're probably not going to be like, wow, like, I really want an astrologer who uses the Placidus house system, or like, I really want an astrologer who uses the whole house system, or the equal house system, or the Campanus system, you know? Like, I think this is something that's more of the concern of the astrologer, and the astrologer has to kind of decide which house system that they're using in their practice. But there's different ways to set up the astrological houses in your natal chart. So if you want to see this, just go to like your natal chart calculator, like your astrocharts.com or your cafe astrology or your astro.com, and you can change the house system. You'll notice that the default house system is Placidus, but you can kind of play around with it and you can set it to equal house system or whole house system, and you can see how your planets will probably change houses. So again, not to go on and on about this, but just for instance, like in the Placidus house system, my Mercury is in the seventh house, right? But you change it to whole house or whole sign houses, and my Mercury becomes pushed in or gets pushed to the eighth house. So depending on the astrologer, I may have Mercury in the seventh house, or I may have Mercury in the eighth house. Again, this probably doesn't matter to you from a consumer's perspective if you're looking to get your natal chart read, but it does matter if you are, you know, looking to go professional with your astrological skills. You're going to have to think a little bit more deeply about which house system you're going to use. And shameless plug, in my Patreon, starting in April, the first batch of astrology content for the next couple months, we are going to be diving deeper into the meanings of the houses. So if you are interested in learning more from me, although there's so much free content when it comes to what the houses mean, you know, come on over to my Patreon if for some reason you would prefer to learn it from me. Someone asked, besides Chiron, what are some other non-planet entities we should know about? I love this question. And, you know, this is also another difference between ancient and modern astrology. Typically, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but typically ancient astrology, we're not really looking at the asteroids, right? And in modern astrology, the asteroids, you know, it kind of depends the astrologer, but the asteroids, at least for me, are something that I really like to look at in a chart, especially if the asteroids like Chiron are tightly, you know, conjunct or in aspect to one of your personal planets. That's when I particularly find it important to bring up in the natal chart. So you asked, besides Chiron, what are some other non-planet entities? So I think you mean asteroids we should know about. So actually, Chiron has been an asteroid that has grown in popularity in the past like 20 years or even 10 years. It really hasn't always been as popular as it has been to talk about. Before Chiron, the sort of star of the show when it came to the asteroids was Ceres. So I would look into Ceres, also Vesta, Juno, Pallas Athena. There's actually thousands of asteroids that you could look into in your birth chart. On my personal episode 33, which I will link in the show notes, I went over the meanings of Ceres, Vesta, Juno, Pallas, and Chiron. And recently, again, I'm referring to the astrology podcast a lot in this episode, but recently on the astrology podcast, Chris Brennan interviewed Demetria George, who's an astrologer who's probably the most famous for her work, not only in ancient astrology, but also her work with working with the asteroids. So she's sort of the queen astrologer of the asteroids. So anything that you can get your hands on by Demetria George, she has a book, I think, called The Asteroid Goddesses, which is all about how the asteroids show up in our charts. Yeah, so those are some asteroids that you can look into. Personally, I also know another asteroid that we like to talk about a lot is Lilith. I think that's like, for me, I never talk about Lilith in my chart readings just because I think it's the first of all, it's a clusterfuck to talk about Lilith because you don't even really, you need to be certain of what you're talking about. There's like three different things that you could potentially be talking about. Like, there's an actual asteroid called Lilith, but then there's two other points in the chart called Dark Moon Lilith and Black Moon Lilith, which actually are not physical things in the sky. They're more like just points in your chart. So if you're going to study Lilith, you first have to decide which one of those three things you're going to look into, and then like the information about what that could possibly mean varies a lot from astrologer to astrologer. So I personally don't use Lilith or talk about Lilith just because I think it's too confusing to know which to use and how to talk about it. I'm not saying I'll never, use it in a birth chart reading, but I probably won't. And there are other astrologers who could probably give you a little bit more information about that. But just tread lightly because no one knows what any of the asteroids really mean. Like, we all have our own little thing about it, but especially with Lilith, like, I don't think we truly know what it could mean. But granted, there's probably astrologers out there who are doing their own case studies about, like, how Lilith is showing up in their clients' lives, and that's awesome, too. So look for someone else to give you more information about Lilith. And another non-planet entity that you could kind of look into is the importance of the angles in the birth chart. So the ascendant or the rising, the nadir, the descendant, and the MC or the midheaven. So pay attention to those angles. Look into that, especially your midheaven or MC or your rising sign. And I went over the angles of the birth chart in my episode 28. So refer to that. Oh, someone asked, a history lesson on astrology would be fun. I'm going to skip that question. That's the one question I'm going to skip. I'm not the best person to give you a great history of astrology, although I'm interested in like how Christianity kind of is the thing that sort of tainted astrology. And I've said this before, but Christianity at some point in time kind of made astrology illegal, right? And it sort of made astrology this thing that became like blasphemous. So even today, because of the undertones of Christian culture or Christianity in our culture, that is still ruling over us so deeply that to this day, people say astrology is not real, or I don't believe in that shit, or that just can't be true. But it's not actually because they think it's not true. It's probably because they've subconsciously adopted a Christian paradigm that they may not even believe in the first place. So tell your friend that at the bar next time they tell you astrology isn't real. But again, Chris Brennan and Demetria George, those are two astrologers that have done some really great work on ancient astrology. So definitely, I would say, do some reading, get a book. I am not the best astrologer as of right now in my career for information about the history of astrology. I'm going to get a drink of water. Take a drink of water. Take a little break. Okay. Someone said, I wish I knew more about the difference between the sun and the moon sign. Thought this was a really good question. So I think the sun and the moon are arguably the most important things in your chart, and the relationship between the sun and the moon in their chart in your chart are also very important. The sun is sort of, you know, who we're becoming. It's our ego. It's sort of who we are at our core, whereas the moon is more of our emotional life. It's what's going on inside of our hearts, inside of our heads. The moon is sometimes what people don't necessarily see about us, although it depends how your moon is aspected and placed in your birth chart. So I would say the sun is sort of sometimes what's going on sort of with you at your core, it's kind of how, you know, this is kind of hard to put into words. See, sometimes you get just so used to, like, knowing something that then when you try to teach it, it's like, wait a second, how do we put this into words? But yeah, that's really how I think about it. Like, the sun kind of being the core of your being, the sun representing, you know, who you were in a past life, who you are becoming in this life, who you are right now, whereas the moon, again, is a lot more about, like, your inner child, maybe what you experienced in childhood, what you learned about how to cope with your emotions. So I would say the sun and the moon are of equal importance. And again, if you have your sun squaring your moon, if you have sun conjunct moon, sun opposition moon, sun square moon, did I already say that? You know, look at the relationship between your sun and your moon, and also check out, you know, what moon phase were you born in. That can also add meaning to your chart. Okay, so overall, I just want to know how to read the entire chart. I've always had a really hard time synthesizing. So yeah, good question. So can I just say, first of all, if you're using, I'm going to just throw some major shade here to astro.com. I don't know how people cast charts on that software because it's so confusing to me. Like, I can't even look at it. Like, I wouldn't be able to read my birth chart if I was looking at it through astro charts. So I really, truly have no idea how people use it. So I would say, you know, look for, like, a clean-looking software to sort of show you what your chart looks like. For me, if I'm talking about, like, a free, like, astrology calculator, I typically like Astro Charts. I've talked about this before. I think the picture of the chart is a little bit more condensed, a little bit more simple. And then the way it condenses the information of your chart, I find to be really clean and easy to access. So try calculating your birth chart on astrocharts.com. And granted, what you're asking, like what you're saying about how, like, I don't get how to read a chart, you know, I think you're missing is that it literally takes a lifetime of studying to truly grasp and synthesize what the chart is saying. And, you know, that's why astrology, yes, it's a science, but it's also poetry. I always say, if you're good at poetry, if you're a poet or you're good at writing, you're good at, like, you know, making metaphors, and you're probably better than most at synthesizing a chart, because there's, like, this bridge that happens when you're looking at a natal chart, and it's like, yeah, this is the science, but once you kind of look at the science of the chart, then again, you have to walk the bridge over to the poetic side of what it is to really tap into what the chart is saying. So it's an extremely difficult thing to be the scientist and the poet all at once, but that's what's special about, you know, astrologers. And I think that, you know, again, this isn't something that you're just going to learn, you know, the first time you look at your chart. It's not going to make sense for a really long time. And I will say that, you know, like, I think we just have to let it not make sense. We have to let ourselves look at a chart and feel lost. And we have to start piecing it together inch by inch by inch. And we have to be willing to do that for a long time. you know, I remember when I first started with my astrology teacher, he would give me, like, random charts of random people, and I wouldn't know them. I would know nothing about them. And he would just say, tell me something about this person. And, you know, you would have to say something about them without even knowing about them, just by looking at their chart. And we did that over and over and over again. And it was almost like, it was like he was training me to, like, look at stuff and, like, be able to synthesize it quicker and quicker. So it's kind of like a muscle muscle that you develop. When it comes to looking at your own chart, I will say that, you know, regardless of how much astrological knowledge you may have, even if you are a professional astrologer, it may be difficult for you to synthesize your own chart, because sometimes it's kind of like reading your own tarot cards. Sometimes it works and sometimes you need a second opinion, you need a second eye on your chart, because we tend to be biased with who we are, right? So the next question, the significance of degrees in astrology. So I thought this was a really good question. Yeah, so what does it mean? What's the significance when I say, you know, I'm a 9 degrees Pisces, or you're a 0 degrees Aries, or whoa, that'd be really cool if you were a 0 degrees Aries, or you're a 29 degrees Pisces, you know, what does it mean? What's the significance? Again, ancient astrology and modern astrology, we kind of differ on this a little bit. In ancient astrology, there is something called the essential dignities, which means that, you know, certain planets tend to be like more productive, or they like to be in certain signs more than they like to be in other signs. It doesn't necessarily mean that it is bad for a planet to be in a sign that it quote unquote doesn't like, but it just means that certain planets, you know, like to be in what we call their domicile or their sign of rulership. So for instance, like Mars, what sign rules over Mars? Aries. That sort of Mars functions best in Aries. And what sign does Mars not love to be in? Libra. So Mars is not functioning at its best in Libra. Although if you have your Mars in Libra, it certainly doesn't mean like you're fucked for life or anything like that. It just kind of means that you might have a different way of going about things, or you have a unique way of getting things done. You know, also it depends on how Mars is being aspected. So within the essential dignities, planets are also exalted in certain degrees. So like, I think, for instance, like, the sun is exalted in, like, 10 degrees Aries. So this is, like, the ultimate degree that the sun likes to be in, you know? Now, for me, I don't really incorporate this into my astrological practice, just because I'm not an ancient astrologer. But also in ancient astrology, we have something called the decans. So as you know, each sign of the zodiac is 30 degrees. And each sign of the zodiac also has 3 decans. So those are sort of the thirds of the whole sign. So if we divide, you know, 30 degrees of Pisces by 3, we have, you know, decan 1, decan 2, and decan 3. So like 0 degrees Pisces to 9 degrees Pisces is then ruled by a certain planet. I believe it's Jupiter. So that's also like another added meaning when it comes to the degrees of astrology. Now, again, this stuff gets super complicated, right? So if this is confusing you and this is going over your head, don't worry about it. And you don't in any way really need to know that in order to get astrology. That's why I kind of prefer to, you know, of course, if this is like really interesting you, definitely look more into ancient astrology. But this is why I prefer, you know, in modern astrology, we have something called the Sabian symbols, which are channeled images by a psychic. And basically, I think sometime in the 80s, this psychic astrologer, she channeled an image for every single one of the degrees of the zodiac. So there's 360 images that she channeled. And I really do enjoy incorporating the Sabian symbols at times in my practice. Because let's say like the Sabian symbol for my midheaven is a crystal ball. I'm not kidding. It's a crystal ball. And what is the midheaven? The midheaven is like what we're bringing into the world. So that channeled image makes a lot of sense for me in my lifetime, right? So looking at the Sabian symbols could be something too that you kind of deepen your meaning of the degrees in your own chart. And I don't know exactly where my astrological career is going to take me, but I will say, I love the Sabian symbols so much, and one day I might channel my own. I might do like my own Sabian symbol part two and see like if I can channel 360 images for each degree of the signs and kind of do like a part two. that would be my dream contribution to the astrological community. Sabian symbols part two. Someone asked, very good question, how do you interpret an empty house? Okay, so, you know, you may look at your chart right now if you have your chart out, and you may notice that there are certain houses in your chart that do not contain a planet. So this does not mean at all that this house is like not important to your life. You know what I mean? Like, if you have nothing in the seventh house, which is the house of relationships, if your seventh house is empty, it does not mean that your love life is fucked, okay? What astrologers do when we see an empty house is that we then look to the planet that is ruling that house. Actually, we do it regardless of whether the house is empty or not. But for instance, let's say that you are a Cancer rising, and your first house is empty. Okay, so what planet rules Cancer? That would be the moon. So then we look to the moon and what the moon is doing in the chart and how it informs the first house. So I know that's kind of complicated, especially if you're just beginning. But Spark Notes is that just because you have an empty house does not mean that that area of your life is not active. So I hope that makes sense. And the last question here is, what is a good thing to look forward to in the stars? Everyone is always like, Mercury's in retrograde, eclipse that, shadow period that, full moon this. So what cosmic events can we have to look forward to? I really appreciate this question because I think, this person makes a good point, right? In the astrological content creating community, I think sometimes there could be, I don't want to use the word catastrophizing, but, you know, it's the nature of astrology is that we have some periods of time where, you know, things might hit the fan, aka right now. And, you know, why are things hitting the fan? Well, we see in the sky. What is the sky doing? Well, you know, we have all these, you know, we basically have a big conjunction in Capricorn. We have all this stuff going on. So what's going on in the sky reflects the world, and what is going on in the world reflects the sky. So part of the reason that I think sometimes, like, astrological news maybe sometimes seems like bad news bears is because, like, astrologers can't, like, ethically, well, they can, but I feel like if you're doing your astrology work with ethics and morals, it's not like you can, like, see a little bit more of a challenging aspect going on and then telling your audience, like, oh no, it's gonna be great, like butterflies and rainbows, Mars is gonna conjunct Saturn, don't worry about it. You know, like, as astrologers, we have a responsibility to, like, making not predictions, but like accurate, semi-accurate hypotheses of what the sky is saying, right? And sometimes, you know, the sky may not say, you know, amazing things. You know, sometimes the sky is saying, you know, we have a challenge on our hands. But I do get what you're saying. Like, you know, there's sometimes astrology content when we're seeing it like over and over and over again, it can be like, and I'm guilty of this too, like, oh, that Mercury retrograde, you know, kick me in the ass or like, oh, Venus retrograde's coming up, like, kill me. Like, you know, we all do this. And I think when it comes down to it is that, you know, no matter what's going on in the collective energy, you always have a choice. You always have your free will to how to use the current astrological weather, right? So you don't have to do any, you don't have to do jack shit in this lifetime. You can sit on your ass all day and not leave the house ever, okay? And your transits will pass you by. And, you know, your Saturn return will come around. Your Pluto square Pluto will come around. And you may feel like a deep psychological shift that wants to happen, but you don't have to physically do anything about it. You know, the planets aren't like having us on strings like puppets. You always have your free will. So remember that. And if you do see an astrologer, including me, saying, talking shit about Mercury retrograde and how much it killed them, you can always say, like, you know, like, I actually used that Mercury retrograde productively, and I went internal, and I journaled every day. And I, you know, one of my great examples is, you know, one of my coworkers, she actually manifested her husband during a Venus retrograde. So that's like a really good example of how she used an astrological event, a challenging astrological event like a Venus retrograde, which traditionally is not the greatest time to like meet someone, or it's not the greatest time to like, you know, whatever. But instead of like dating or like trying to search for someone, instead she used that Venus retrograde to write down, you know, what she truly wanted to manifest in a partner, and then use that Venus retrograde to go internal, shift those things inside of her that she needed to shift in order to manifest the partner that she wanted. And that partner did manifest, and now they're married, you know. So you always have a choice of how you're going to use, you know, the aspects. And, you know, no matter how bad of a day it is in the sky, you know, I always also like to think that, you know, no matter the day, there's always new souls coming to Earth, right? There's always new babies being born. And that's always something that I like to think of, like, wow, like, you know, with this upcoming Jupiter conjunction to Pluto, or the upcoming Mars conjunction to Saturn, like, can you imagine, like, the soul who is choosing to incarnate this planet on that day? You know, they're choosing to have that Jupiter conjunct Pluto in their chart, and like, how, wow, like, you know, like, they could be like a really cool person, or like, they could turn into someone who saves this earth, or invents something that sucks the fossil fuels out of our air, or, you know, figures out a way to, you know, get everybody clean water in this world. Like, I always think of that when we're going through a quote unquote bad aspect, or like a bad transit. Well, regardless of the transit, good or bad, there are souls arriving to this earth, and there are souls who are going to use that aspect in their chart on that day, you know, to make changes in the world, hopefully. So hopefully this kind of helped answer some of like the most the questions that you've been having about astrology lately. And I would love to do a part two of this episode. So if you do have, you know, something, what you wish you knew about astrology, if you have something that you want me to go into or answer a question about, feel free to email me, Instagram, DM me. I'll save your question for another part of this episode. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. If I've been a help to you, you know, by listening to this podcast, if you could do me a favor, leave me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. And if you're feeling extra nice and you want to send me extra love, a review would be so awesome. That would be great. And if you don't already follow me on Instagram, would love to say hi to you over there. And at the very least, if you can't do any of that and you just enjoyed this episode, if you want to share it with a friend, that would mean so much to me too. And you guys are honestly the best. I have like the sweetest DMs that I save all the time, and you guys are just, you're awesome. So thank you for listening. Thank you for giving me this opportunity and this space to step into who I am. And I hope you guys, you know, stay safe, stay healthy, use this time as well as you possibly can. And I'll see you in the next episode.